Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Jovan, boo-ha! Boo-ha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to part two of our two-part mailbag. A quick reminder for those on video to hit that subscribe button, would mean the world to me, and for those listening on audio to download the episode, and also a reminder to join the Buha's Block Discord page. And merch is live. I will be doing some ad reads for that throughout the off season. The initial batch of orders have been made. They've all been sent out, and make sure you are repping Buha's Block. All right, let's get into the Q&A. First question is a two-parter. First from Mo Love. What is realistically possible for off-season moves considering the CBA, other teams' unwillingness to take on underperforming contracts, and everyone's desire for two-way players? When you consider who you would like to return, Luka, AR, Braun, Rui Smart, how much optionality, in all caps, does the front office have to get talent and not give up meaningful pieces? And then the second one is from Colts. How likely do you think it is that the Lakers are a cap space team at all? The way I see it, if LeBron is coming back, some combination of that plus Rui, Smart, Ayton, Kennard, and AR's cap hold is going to eat up our entire cap. And we should be thinking more about who is available for the MLE and minimums. All right, let's dig into everybody's favorite current topic, which is the offseason and LA's various pathways to improving the roster. I will be doing a ton of offseason content in between now and the start of free agency. I will be doing some draft content with draft experts and looking at who the Lakers could potentially pick at 25, who they can maybe trade up for, who they can maybe acquire in the second round. I will be also looking at key unrestricted free agents, key restricted free agents, sleeper free agents. And then I will also be doing a breakdown in depth of the various pathways LA can take to improve the roster. There's a ton of optionality this summer for LA. The key will be actualizing that optionality and turning the optionality into action and into results and into a better roster going into the 2026-27 season. For simplicity's sake, I want to walk through the Lakers cap situation and then talk through a couple of the options here that will determine what LA is able to ultimately do. So first, let's look at the guys who are projected to be on the roster. This is a rough projection. They could technically dump some of these guys, which I will touch on. One of these guys has a player option. He could potentially opt out. One of these players has a partially guaranteed contract. They could waive that player. So, but let's just take a rough look at this here. So Luka Doncic on the books for $49.5 million. Vando on the books for $12.4 million. DeAndre Ayton, $8.1 million player option. As of right now, I'm leaning toward him opting in, but time will tell if that's the case. But for now, let's put him on the books at 8.1. Jake LaRavia, $6 million. Dalton Connect, $4.2 million. Bronny James, 2.3, but he has a $1.2 million guarantee on that. So if you were to waive Bronny, you'd save about $1.1 million, and that 1.2 would be on your cap sheet. Adu, $2.2 million. And then I have it here for the number 25 pick. Last year, the number 25 pick was Jace Richardson to the Magic. He made just under $3 million, $2.98 million. So I'm putting the same salary. Technically, I think it'll be a little bit higher, maybe like into the low threes. But for simplicity's sake, let's just keep it at the same. If you add up Luca, Vando, DA, Jake, Dalton, Bronny, Adu, and the number 25 pick, that gets you to 8 players on the roster, and that is a total of $87,664,159. But Lakers are at an incomplete roster, so you have to add in, for our purpose here, we will be putting Austin Reeves and Jackson Hayes on the books with their respective cap holds. Austin's cap hold is projected to be $20.9 million. Jackson's cap hold is projected to be $4.5 million. So you add those two guys in, and those are, with Austin, that's below the contract he's going to get. With Jackson, that's in the vicinity, maybe a little low, but around where he's going to be. So you add those two guys in. Now the Lakers have 10 players under contract. Then, because they are under the league minimum of 12, they get two empty roster charges added to their cap sheet. So if you are under 12 players, for every player you are under 12, you're going to be charged $1.36 million that's projected for next season. And so you add in the 8 players officially under contract, you add in the cap holds of Austin Reeves and Jackson Hayes, and then you add the two empty roster charges, and the Lakers get to $115,774,640. Now, let's take a step back. The projected cap actually dropped back in March from projected to be $166 million to $165 million. So the cap is coming in a little bit lower. So if you look at the math there of $165 million for the cap, and we don't know the official number yet, but it's going to be in that ballpark, minus $115.7 million, that gets you to $49,225,360. So the Lakers, if they only have the guys on the books that they're projected to have, plus the number 25 pick, plus they keep the cap holds of Austin and Jackson, and then they have the two empty roster charges, they'd have about $49.2 million to play with. Now, there's a lot of nuance and contingency within this, right? Because in this scenario, I am declining the team option of Nick Smith Jr., which I think that's how that's going to play out, but obviously the Lakers could keep him. I am putting DeAndre Ayton on the books with his $8.1 million player option, but he could opt out, and that would give the Lakers an additional $8.1 if they rescind the rights. There'd be a cap hold with DA on their sheet, so they'd have to rescind the rights to get him completely off the books. You also have the partial guarantee with Bronny and his contract, and then that's before mentioning the possibility of LA trade dumping Vando or Jake or Dalton or some combination of those guys to create some additional flexibility. But the most straightforward path right now is like these guys are on the roster, and Austin and Jackson and their cap holds, then the empty roster charges. Now let's look at the cap holds here, because the cap holds are where things get a little tricky. LeBron's cap hold, for example, is $59.5 million. So as long as the Lakers have not rescinded the rights to LeBron, he will be on the books for $59.5 million. Rui is at $27.4 million. Austin, as aforementioned, is at $20.9. Luke is at $13.2. Jackson's at $4.5. And then Marcus is at $6.2 if he opts out. He has a player option. I think he will opt out. I would be shocked if Marcus does not make double-digit millions next season. So if you take the LeBron, Rui, Luke, and Marcus cap holds, and we're putting Austin and Jackson to the side because they're already on the cap sheet, you add up those four players and their cap holds, you get $106.3 million. And if you add that to LA's salary projection at this point. Like, you would take away 2.7 from the empty roster charges, which would bring them down to 113. And then you add in those cap holds of 106, you're at $219 million, which means you are $3 million under the second apron. And so at that point, you would have 14 players under contract. You'd be about $3 million under the second apron. And LA could maybe sign a minimum player, depending on their terms of service. Otherwise, they just would be standing pat with 14 players. Now, just because they're at the 219 million doesn't mean they're going to stay at the 219 million, because I'd be shocked if LeBron is making $59.5 million from the Lakers next season. I would be shocked if Rui's making 27.4. So those two alone, if we knock down Rui to a range of 16 to 20 million, maybe let's say 16 to 18 million, and then LeBron is, I've stated why I think LeBron is going to have to take a lot less, or at least for what the Lakers' ambitions are this offseason. But let's just say that the middle ground here is like $40 million for LeBron. If you have LeBron at 40, Rui at 18, even if you rescind the rights to Luke and Marcus, it's tricky because Marcus, the starting salary for Marcus is $6.2 million. That cap hold would be the most the Lakers can offer him without using cap space or an exception. So Marcus is not going to opt out of his current contract to then re-sign at $6.1 million. It would have to be more than that. So I think Marcus is going to be a guy they have to use either cap space or an exception on. But just with LeBron and Rui, even if you get rid of Luke, just LeBron and Rui, again, for argument's sake, that's $58 million. But even if you knock LeBron to $30 million, that's still $48 million, which I mentioned the cap number right now at 49.3. Like, you are right there, basically, using all of your cap space on LeBron and Rui. That's to say nothing of Marcus, who in this instance, you can't even use cap space on Marcus. You'd have to use the room exception, which is about $9.3 million, and that might be low for Marcus, in my opinion, and you'd be losing Luke. So you could keep LeBron, you could keep Rui, you could keep Marcus, but you're, at that point, basically used all your cap space. Then you'd be going over the cap with re-signing Austin, re-signing Jackson, and then you would have 13 players under contract and have some room to add another minimum guy, and then you'd be at 14. But point being with all of this is, like, the cap space dries up quickly. And so the Lakers could operate above the cap. You could just re-sign LeBron to some number, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, whatever the number is. You could re-sign Rui somewhere between 15 to 20. You could even keep Luke. I think he'd probably take a pay cut on the 13.2, but somewhere in the $8 to $10 million range. And then Marcus, you could use the non-taxpayer mid-level exception on and retain him. But again, you are now basically, you're over the cap, because now you're also going to re-sign Austin above the cap. You're over the cap, and the one move you're making technically outside of minimum guys is re-signing Marcus for the non-taxpayer. So, and even if you lose Luke, you still don't have cap space, or the most you could offer Marcus in that scenario is still 6.2. So if Marcus is looking for 10 plus million, the only two ways the Lakers can retain him are by using cap space or by using the non-taxpayer MLE on him. And either way, that is limiting their ability to, like, in the cap space route, that's limiting their ability to add two players within that cap space route. And then the non-taxpayer MLE route, maybe he doesn't take the full thing, but even then, you got at most like a few million to play with for other guys. And so you run out of optionality pretty quickly. And so the Lakers kind of have like two paths here where they can run it back to a degree with LeBron and Rui and Luke and Marcus, or three of those four, and then use the non-taxpayer MLE and minimums to fill out the rest of the roster. Or they can be a cap space team, but to be a cap space team, LeBron either has to take a massive discount or leave, or they have to, he still probably has to take some sort of discount if they keep him. But then you're also losing Luke at a minimum and potentially Rui or Marcus, depending on where their numbers come in. And honestly, if Rui's commanding 18 to 20 million compared to Marcus at 10 to 12, I already have been on the side of I would prefer to keep Marcus over Rui, and I think the Lakers should prioritize him more and will. But if it's like Marcus at 10 versus Rui at 18, I think that's a no-brainer of I'd rather have the extra $8 million in flexibility to potentially add another above minimum contract. Or maybe that keeps Luke, right? Like, would you rather have Marcus and Luke, Marcus for 10, Luke for 8, and you know that's $18 million versus Rui at 18? I would rather have Marcus and Luke. So the Lakers are going to have some tough decisions here. I do see, the more I look at their cap situation, it does feel like Rui or Marcus is going to become a choice at some point. And it's going to be difficult to keep both those guys. Now, the giant caveat here is if LeBron retires or if LeBron leaves, then they have a lot more space to play with. And again, if you go back to that $49.2 million, if you could re-sign Rui at 18, Marcus at 12, that's 30, and you still have another $19.2 million to play with. But we haven't even talked about, like, we're just dipping our toes in the water here. We haven't even talked about restricted free agency and if you make an offer for Walker Kessler, because again, if you go Kessler, Peyton Watson, Jalen Duren, Tari Eason, I mean, that's taken a decent chunk out of that $49 million. That's to say nothing of, again, but potentially re-signing LeBron, Rui, and Marcus. And I know there's going to be a ton of questions about the rights. And like, so just to be clear, you can rescind the rights to a player and still retain them. Just because you rescind the rights doesn't mean that player is gone. It just means the rights are, like, for example, with Austin, the Lakers are able to keep Austin on that $20.9 million cap hold because of his bird rights. And then they're able to go above the cap and sign him to an even greater number. So it's a similar thing with some of these guys where you keep them on the cap hold. You can agree to contracts immediately at the start of free agency and then reduce those numbers. But again, I talked through that exercise a little bit ago. It's like, even if you get LeBron to reduce from 59.5 to 40 or even 30, and you get Rui to go from 27.4 to 18, we're still talking about at least $48 million combined with those two, if not 58. So then you're operating above the cap.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
And that's where the second question comes in of looking at MLE and minimum guys. Like, I've done some of that. I think there's a chance Mitchell Robinson could be an MLE guy. He might make more than that, but you also have to think about, like, I mean, the Knicks could pay him more than that, but if, you know, it's Brooklyn or Chicago, again, there's a couple of teams that, depending on what they do, could create some cap space, but maybe Mitchell Robinson is a candidate for that. Robert Williams, maybe you could split the part of the non-taxpayer mid-level exception with Robert Williams and another player. And the one thing I haven't really touched on here that much is the Lakers can obviously trade or trade dump Vando, Jake, and DK, but even if, let's just say it's like you dump Vando and DK, that is $16.6 million coming off the books. So that 49.2 jumps up to 65.8. That sounds great. But again, if you are getting an RFA in this case, let's say you're getting Walker Kessler or Peyton Watson for $32 million. Immediately, that's half your cap space gone, and now you have $32 million to retain some combination of LeBron, Rui, Luke, and Marcus. You could probably keep two of those, like two of the non-LeBron guys, or maybe LeBron plus one of the other guys. But like, you're pretty much losing two players at least there, if not three. and then that's your team. And so if like the Lakers come into next season, let's just say it's like LeBron plus Watson or LeBron plus Kessler, you have upgraded the starting group, right? You've replaced Marcus or DA with a better player, and that has made the starting group better. However, if it comes at the cost of Rui and Luke, well, those are your two best shooters and two key bench guys for you. If it's Luke and Marcus, those are also two key bench guys now. And now you got to replace a couple backcourt pieces. Or if it's Rui and Marcus, like that was your fourth and fifth best players this season. So I think the goal is obviously to retain as much of the core, as much of the primary rotation as possible, and add to it. But as we talk through different scenarios here, it does get pretty complicated. And I know that the Lakers are going to try to dump Vando and DK, and that might cost them a first round pick. I don't see anyone just taking on Vando's 25 plus million over the next 2 years without getting some sort of asset for that. So, I mean, that's its own conversation of what you have to attach to get off those guys. The 16.6 could just be a part of keeping LeBron, Rui, Luke, and Marcus. Now, I think Luke is probably the casualty here, among those four. So you'll put him to the side. But if you do get that to the 65, even if LeBron goes down to, let's just say 25 for argument's sake, Rui at 18, that's 43. Marcus at 12, that's 55. Now you got $10 million left over. So it's going to be really interesting to see how LA navigates this. And do they want to be a cap space team? Do they want to be an above the cap team? If you're an above, over the cap team, you do have access to that non-taxpayer MLE, which is more than the 9.3 exception that you would get being a cap team. But then you're basically running it back and adding one player. Even if you are flipping some of this money, like the 16 point, like you'd probably need the 16.6 plus DA opting out. Then that would be enough for now you're at like 24 plus, where that starts to be a chunk where you could find, you could acquire somebody or do something with that. But like, for example, 16.6 isn't even enough to acquire Lu Dort into that additional space, right? So the Lakers are just going to have a ton of tough decisions to make. And that's why, again, when we talk about LeBron, I think that number is probably going to have to be in that 20 to 25. If it's any higher, at some point, it's really difficult to add to the roster, even if you are shedding salary on top of that. Then they're going to have to decide how they feel about Rui, Marcus, and Luke, and what are the numbers they would want those guys back at. How many of those guys do they want back? And then, depending on where they're at, they could have some cap space, or they could be above the cap. And I will touch on this in more depth and go through each specific scenario in the coming days and weeks, but I wanted to give you a bit of an overview where, you just quickly run out of money here as the Lakers. And it's really going to be like some combination of probably losing some of these key guys plus shedding salary to really get the flexibility. The Lakers are going to have to get creative and be very intentional with how they approach all this. Next question from Delta. Hey there, Jovan. What up? Love from the Philippines. Great factual and unbiased analysis. Keep up the great work. OKC and Houston showed us just how devoid of two-way players the Lakers are. It proves you can't win in the playoffs if your players can't contribute on both ends of the floor. LeBron, Rui, Jake, and Vando, only one of our wings can shoot and defend consistently, and LeBron is now too old to sustain that high level for long stretches. Luka, Austin, Luke, Smart, it's the same story for our guards. Smart is also very streaky and highly inconsistent offensively. Who do you think needs to go, and which players should LA prioritize to fix this issue? LeBron is proving that LA can still compete hard, even when missing Luka and AR. With the right moves, maybe we're closer than it looks. Appreciate that, Delta. Shout out to the Philippines. Let's go point by point here. So OKC and Houston, two great examples of young teams with two-way wings, two-way guards, athleticism, length, and those are key parts of their identity. And when the Lakers struggled in both those series, when the Lakers struggled all season, it often looked like they were playing in quicksand or molasses, and they just were far slower and less athletic than their opponent, and teams that could pressure the Lakers, speed them up, and get them out of their rhythm. All of a sudden, you are turning them over. You are running out in transition. You're getting offensive rebounds. You're beating them to loose balls. And there's just a clear athleticism gap between the Lakers and most of the league, but like especially most of the other great teams, right? I think with the exception of maybe Denver, and you know, Denver has Gordon and Watson. With maybe the exception of Denver, I think like, you know, Minnesota is much more athletic than the Lakers. OKC, San Antonio, Houston. You go to the East and New York, I would put in that category. Cleveland's got a bunch of speed, and then they also have some athleticism and mobility with their bigs. Boston, a bunch of wings and athletes, Boston I'll throw in there. And then Detroit's obviously very athletic. So yeah, I mean, the Lakers are, it's really like a competition between them and Denver, and you might even give Denver a slight edge with Gordon and Watson versus, I guess, LeBron. And like, it's like LeBron and Jackson. Like Jackson and DA might be the two most athletic non-LeBron players, and you could throw Rui in there, but you might even give the edge to Denver. I mean, it's close between those two, but yeah, the Lakers certainly need to be more athletic. They need more two-way talent. To your point, looking at the wings with LeBron, I mean, I would even say like LeBron's jumper was not the same this season, and he had some nice stretches down the end of the year and in the playoffs, but LeBron, like that was arguably the biggest part of his game that regressed this year, was his three-point shooting, was his jump shooting. So if you're putting LeBron as the guy here, I don't even know if you can say the current version of him is like a 3-and-D. He's obviously a two-way player because he contributes offensively in a variety of ways. But I guess if you're, you mentioned the wings can shoot and defend, that there's only one of them. I would say that one, I mean, all these guys have their shortcomings. As you said, like LeBron's 41, and you just can't ask him to carry a certain defensive load every single night. Rui, I think, is better in the playoffs defensively, and in specific matchups, especially against big men, I think can lock in and be a good post defender or like fronting. And like we've seen Jokic, Randall, Kat, Şengün, like he's had these matchups where he's been effective as a post defender, but the Lakers have often slotted him as a wing and as a perimeter defender. And that's where I think he has some real shortcomings with his hip mobility, his lateral quickness, his decision-making, his angles, his awareness, all that stuff. So yeah, I would say Rui can clearly shoot. He's the best playoff three-point shooter of all time. I would still slot him as a below average defender overall. Jake lost his shot this season in LA. Yeah, but is, I would say, most nights in a somewhere between above average to solid defensively. Vando is still solid to good defensively, but the corner three-point shooting progress was short-lived and, as we saw, not a thing in the playoffs. Then you go to the guards. Luka, we've talked about his defense all season. I think most nights is somewhere between below average to average. Does have the games, the possessions where it's really rough. But I think his playmaking, his help defense, his awareness are all underrated things. And people just like to clip him and go viral with bad Luka plays. Austin really struggled after coming back from the oblique injury, and we know he can be targeted. I think overall is better defensively than people give him credit for, and is much closer to around average on that end. Luke, I think, is in that bottom 10 to 15th percentile in terms of defenders in the league, and I think it really started to show up later in the season and in the playoffs. And then Marcus is an obvious, and with the other guys like Luka, we know about his shooting. Austin is an above average 3-point shooter, not in the playoffs recently, which he's got to work on. But overall, yes, Luke is one of the best shooters in the league. And then Marcus for the season was a below average 3-point shooter, but had his stretches, had his moments where he was at least average, if not better. And then he's clearly a really good defender, but to your point, streaky and highly inconsistent. So if we look at all this and we say these are the eight perimeter guys on the group, I would throw Bronny into this, where right now I would say he's below average offensively and average-ish defensively, but he also is at a major size disadvantage at being 6'1", 6'2", if we're being generous. Like, there's just a limitation there defensively. And you got to Duin, who I think is a solid defender, but is also very raw and limited offensively. I mean, we just talked through like none of these guys, like the closest you could get to is Marcus when his shot is on is a two-way guy. LeBron, when he's fully engaged and his jumper is falling, if we're just judging the shooting, of course, he's a two-way guy when his defense is at a certain level because he's contributing a bunch offensively. I'm just making that caveat because I know I don't want people jumping on. I'm strictly talking shooting here. Rui, I think more so in the playoffs, but he does have his limitations, especially on the perimeter. Jake really depends on his confidence and if his shot's falling. And then Vando is just not in the cards for him. Luca, Austin, and Luke all have their defensive limitations, but are all positives offensively. And then Bronny, I think, still has room to grow on both sides of the ball. So it's like, yeah, I mean, it's a relatively limited group in terms of two-way play. I say all this to say, like, I think that the core of the roster should still be Luca, LeBron, and Austin. And then with the other five guys, or the other seven guys, I think Bronny and Adu are cheap contracts who make sense to keep around. Again, with Bronny, probably has some level of tie-in with LeBron and his future. But I mean, among the group of Luke, Smart, Rui, Jake, Vando, I would prioritize it Marcus, Rui, Luke, Jake, Vando. I know it's been a minute since Jake had some of those performances early in the season, but we did see the games where Jake hit a few threes, played with confidence. He had several games where he was in double figures scoring wise. And I just think his skill level and talent offensively is at a level that Vando just can't get to. So to get more specific, I'd be cool with LA letting Luke walk in free agency. I would try to dump Vando's contract, and I'd also be open to dumping Jake's contract, though I don't think you have to at just $6 million. I think that's a decent contract that he can still grow into. I think he was performing at that level for most of the season, then tailed off the last couple months. But I have more confidence in Jake's still got a few years left to hit his prime. Vando's basically there or about to be there. And so I would still bet on Jake being the better two-way prospect at this point. So, yeah, I mean, I think it probably starts with losing Luke and trading Vando, and then we'll see where Jake fits into things and what LA is able to do. In terms of which players LA should prioritize to fix this issue, it's difficult to say without knowing who's available on the trade market, if any guys are going to be potentially bought out. But off the top of my head and based on the names that I've discussed on here, I would say guys like Peyton Watson, Tari Eason, Lou Dort, Herb Jones, Jalen Suggs. If Dylan Brooks becomes available in Phoenix, if they determine that they're just not really going anywhere and they want to have some version of a fire sale, I think you could go that route. Io DeSumo would be another one. I'd throw in Bruce Brown, Keon Ellis, Quentin Grimes. This is in no particular order. This is just looking at the list of free agents. Matisse Thybulle. I mean, it gets grim. Kelly Oubre. And then I like Ochai Agbaji, Jalen Clark. I think those are some of the names that I'd be interested in either trading for or signing if I'm the Lakers. But they definitely need, I said earlier, you know, a couple of weeks ago that I think they need at least two to three more two-way players and like put center to the side because they need a better center and they need a better defensive center. But like non-center, if we're looking positions one through four, I think they need to add two to three true two-way guys or as close, like closer to at least like the Marcus level of being okay. Like most nights you're going to be 80th percentile, 85th percentile defensively. And then you're going to fluctuate from like 35th percentile to 60th percentile offensively, right? And you know, some games you're a bit below average, some games you're a bit above average, but you're sort of in that average-ish range. I think they need more guys like that. And more so kind of in the Marcus role too, of like being good defensively, but average-ish offensively. You can get away with good offensively, average-ish defensively. But I think in general, LA just needs more defense, length, athleticism. So that would be how I would prioritize this summer.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Next one is also a two-parter about the draft from Sliced Pancake. I know you said you haven't looked much into the draft. This is the first draft I've truly looked into. I think we have to use the 25th pick to get a wing or a big. I could also see us buying into the second round to get another young prospect. What's your thoughts on this? Then he lists some names. Like to know your thoughts on this for a potential start to the offseason, or do you think we trade the pick? Personally, I like adding young, cost-effective players, and I trust some of the new front office additions. And then Bowen asks, should the Lakers keep the 25th pick? And if so, are there any draft prospects that could fill the Lakers' needs at center or a 3-and-D wing, even if they may take a year or two to develop? Appreciate the draft questions. As Sliced Pancake noted, I am not a draft Nick. I typically will try to become one the month or so leading into the draft, and I have started to do some research and read mock drafts and watch a little bit of film, but I don't feel comfortable making my predictions or projections in terms of who LA should take. What I will say is that I am going to have 2 to 3 draft episodes leading into the draft, and of course a draft breakdown on draft night, and then also following up with a more in-depth breakdown of the player or players. I would just frame this more so in the context of player archetypes. And I have been joking about this on Lakers Collective, but like, they cannot draft a guy, in my opinion, that is under 6'6". I think 6'6" is at the minimum. Now, obviously, there are exceptions. If an incredible value drops and you don't feel good about the alternatives there, and it's a best player available situation, and there's an awesome guard who's 6'3", 6'4", even 6'5", and you're just like, this is too good to pass up, that's an exception here. But I would say, in general, if I'm LA, I'm looking at one of two archetypes, maybe three if you want to expand it a bit. But I'm looking at 2A wings, guys who project to be at least league average in terms of their shooting and can defend multiple positions and project to be above average defenders. And that's ideally in that 6'6 to 6'9 range. And then I'm looking at centers, and centers who I would say, there's so many different ways you can go about it, but it would be great to find like the Derek Lively, Daniel Gafford, rim running, rebounding, rim protecting, versatile, defensively, you know, good mobility center. If that guy's there, great. Go get that guy. If not that guy, then I think you could go with maybe more of like a stretch big there's like a best center available. But I would say the things I would not want in a center would be a slow, unathletic center who can't defend, right? Like, I think if you're going to be on the slower side, you need to have a certain amount of length and size and rim protection and paint protection, all that stuff. So if you're going to go that route, like, I would not want, the Lakers have had these like the Drew Timmy mold, I guess, would be, I think you need a center who's at least above average on the defensive end. To be clear, I don't think the Lakers are finding a starting caliber player at number 25. I think it's going to be it'd be great if they could find a rotation caliber player for year one, or maybe a guy who even into year two could be a rotation guy, but it's unlikely they find a starter at number 25. This is a deep draft. There are going to be some good players available, but just finding a starting, there's always exceptions, and maybe someone really pops in summer league or training camp, or if the Lakers do a mini camp this year, but whatever, there's a scenario in which it happens. But realistically, this is going to be like the eighth or ninth man in a best case scenario. And that would be a best case scenario, though. That would be very helpful if the Lakers get an eighth man for $3 million, like, you always would take that and sign up for that, right? And then the third archetype that I hadn't mentioned yet would be kind of that tweener.
an example would be like sort of the John Collins of you're maybe like 6'8", 6'9", 6'10" at the most. You're kind of in between a three or a four. I mean, it'd be great, like a Peyton Watson, someone like that, but you know, who can maybe be a really strong roller or, you know, strong slasher, can attack closeouts. But in general, I think LA, to kind of tie in some of the previous questions and answers, like they just need as much two-way help as possible. And for perimeter guys, the most important skill in the modern NBA, I mean, there's two, or like, can you shoot at a baseline level of competence? And can you defend at a baseline level of competence? And as long as you could do both, like you have a potential future in the league. With bigs, it's a similar thing of like, can you catch and finish at a certain level, especially if you're more of a pick and roll big? And can you protect the rim and rebound at a certain level? And I think LA needs to add either a center or a wing. If neither one of those are there, I would lean more that like tweener forward archetype with some athleticism and skill and just, you know, slashing compared, you know, almost like a Derrick Jones, but like a bigger Derrick Jones. And again, I like John Collins and Derrick Jones aren't different players, but like kind of that general archetype of an athletic slasher guy who could be in the dunker spot guy. And Adu might end up filling that role, but like that's why it's third for me on the list. I would probably prioritize it. And actually, this is where I might favor centers over wings. Now, it depends on the talent, the context, like a legit, like good two-way wing that slips to the Lakers at 25. I think I would take that over center. But if it's like an okay wing that has some holes in their game, but you're kind of trying to squint and talk yourself into it, I might prefer the center at that point and just see, hey, can we add a center in free agency or trade? Keep Jackson, have this center and have like the three-headed center group. And then if you don't have either of those, that's where I might lean more the forward, you know, wing slasher type rather than a guard. As for whether the Lakers are going to keep the pick or not, I am leaning toward LA keeping the pick. I think there are some obvious exceptions. I would not be surprised if Giannis Antetokounmpo is traded on draft night. I think there's a decent possibility of that. So do the Lakers get involved in that as the primary team receiving Giannis, or do they get involved in that as a third team that can help facilitate acquiring some salary into their cap situation? And you know, that wouldn't be like, you could agree to the terms on draft night and then execute the terms once the summer starts. Like we've seen those types of situations happen, but could LA get involved as a third team to either poach some talent from the Bucks or the third team, or are they involved as the primary team acquiring Giannis? But there'll also be some ripple effects with that. Like maybe Giannis gets traded the day of the draft or early in the draft, and then you start to see other dominoes of teams starting to move salary around, move players around, and the Lakers can get involved in that. And so there's an open-ended nature to this, and it's tough to say with a blanket they're 100% keeping the pick or they're 100% trading the pick. If a certain player becomes available in the trade market, whether it's Giannis or someone else, and it's going to require putting that pick on the table, I think the Lakers will do it for a certain caliber of player, especially if they check a serious need of either just a massive talent upgrade or starting center, starting wing. So I think there are scenarios in which they would entertain trading the pick. But for now, I'm leaning more toward them keeping the pick.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Next one from Taken. Is it better for the Lakers to build a top five offense and top 15 defense, or a top 10 offense and a top five defense? And which one actually wins in the West? Additionally, are the Lakers actually building a contender around Luka, or are they just collecting good enough pieces and hoping vibes and talent figure it out? Thanks. Well, the second part of this question, I can't really answer until I see what the roster looks like going into the season. I would hope the Lakers are trying to build a contender around Luka and not just praying that vibes and good enough pieces are going to be enough. I think they need some real upgrades to the roster. And I think they need to add two starting level players, a new starting center, a new starting wing, plus the big three, plus Marcus, Rui, maybe even DA in a backup role. That is a much stronger rotation to me than this current rotation. If you look at it through the lens of you have two starters better than DA and Marcus, and then Marcus is your primary backup guard, Rui is your primary backup forward, and DA is your backup center. Like you just shifted three guys who started a lot of games for you this season. I mean, two of the guys, or one guy was a primary starter, the other two split it, and you shifted all those guys to bench guys. Like that's how you build a true contender, is you have the embarrassment of riches, you have the embarrassment of depth, and you have starting level guys coming off your bench. The Lakers, I think at times of the season, barely reached five starting level guys. I think overall you could argue they had like six of them, but I think you need eight or nine. And you look at what San Antonio has, what OKC has, and like that's really the key here. So LA has to find a way to not only add depth to the middle of the roster, but add depth to the back end of the roster. And like it's going to be a tall task for them. But I think the Lakers are trying to build a contender. The one way I would say they're going off of vibes or hope is if they just run it back. That would be the one way to me that you got swept by OKC. No, you didn't have Luka, but they didn't have J-Dub. I think with both teams at full strength, it's a 5-game series. Maybe in the best case scenario, it's a 6-game series, but you still have a gap there. And adding a bench player or, non-taxpayer MLE guy, I don't think is getting you over the hump. I think you need to make some serious additions. But as we talked about earlier, it just gets tough because then it's hard to make those additions while also retaining guys. So the Lakers are in a predicament there. And then for the first part of this question, is it better for the Lakers to be a top 5 offense and top 15 defense or a top 10 offense and a top 5 defense? I would say between these two, I would rather be the top 10 offense and top 5 defense, because you are then top 10 on both sides of the ball, which historically has been one of the prerequisites for being a true contender and for winning a championship. Now, there are some exceptions. We've typically seen if you are elite on one side of the ball, if you could be top 5, if not top 3, you can get away with being average-ish on, like, the 2023 Nuggets were a good example of this, of they were top 3 offense and in the regular season below average defense, and then like they were better in the playoffs. And so you could be average-ish on one side of the ball if you're absolutely elite, like best in the league, or again top 3 in something. But I would say it's better to be top 10 on both sides of the ball. And in terms of what's more important, it's difficult to say, because I think it changes every year. Some years we've seen it's more important to be better offensively. Some years it's more important to be better defensively. This year, if we look at it, in the regular season, OKC was number 1 in defense. San Antonio was number 3. New York was number 7. And Cleveland was number 15. So 3 of the 4 conference finalists were top 7 defenses. One of them was average. And if we flip to the offensive side, San Antonio was 3rd in offense. New York was 4th, Cleveland was 6th, and OKC was 7th. So all 4 teams were top 7 on the offensive side. So 3 of the 4 were top 10 and actually top 7 on both sides of the ball. One of them, the exception here, is Cleveland, who was the 4 seed, won the fewest amount of games of these 4, and was not projected to get to the conference finals. They were 6th on offense, 15th on defense. So again, similar mold of top 5-ish on one side of the ball and average-ish on the other. So I think that's really the way here. So if LA's top 5 in offense, top 15 in defense, if they're 4th in offense and like 13th in defense, that might be good enough, but you probably want to be better on the defensive side. So I would take 8th in offense and like 5th in defense over 4th in offense and 13th in defense. I think having the better two-way balance, again, 3 of the 4 conference finalists, top 7 on both sides of the ball. So that just shows you, if you're really good on both sides of the ball, you're going to be a really good team, and that is going to translate into the playoffs. And if we look at the playoffs here, among the 16 teams, OKC 1st in offense, New York 2nd in offense, San Antonio 3rd in offense, Cleveland 5th in offense. So all four are top five teams offensively. Then defensively, San Antonio is first, New York is second, OKC is sixth, and Cleveland is eighth. So once again, two of the teams are top three on both sides of the ball in the playoffs. OKC is top six on both sides, and then Cleveland again is closer to average. But I think you need to be above average and ideally top 10 on both sides of the ball to be a true contender. And that is played out more often than not. I think the more realistic path for the Lakers would be top five offense, top 10 defense. And can they get to that top 10 defense level and maintain that? I think top five offense, as long as they don't lose like a bunch of their offensive talent, they should still be in that top five offense mix next season. The question is, can they be a top 10? I think they could be a top 15 defense. I think they've shown that they could be around that range, but can they be top 10? That's a different question entirely, and it's going to depend on the talent that they have. And then final one here from Yana Kian. A lot of the focus on AJ Mitchell performing so well on a rookie contract has had many of us thinking that the Lakers really have whiffed on these rotational players that could have helped be sixth and ninth men in the lineup. At the same time, we've also traded a lot of those first rounders away, whether it's getting out of bad Russ situations or getting a franchise centerpiece by including our one good recent drafted guy in Max Christie. Has there been any word on Mark Walter replacing the Bus brothers who got fired that were very much involved in the scouting process? This question was submitted before Lakers Thunder game four, before the Lakers season ended. And we spoke to Rob Pelinka the next morning, and he shared that the Lakers are in the process of interviewing and will be hiring two assistant GMs very soon. So that is the update on that. The Lakers have also made some front office hires that have not been announced yet. I've not gotten full clarity on that, but I know they've been interviewing candidates for months for various positions. I reported that earlier, kind of around midway point of the season when someone had asked about where things were at. I figured they were going to hire an assistant GM. I didn't know they were going to hire two. I think that's the right approach. I've been talking about beefing up the front office with quality and quantity. I think that's very important for the Lakers. It's just a really rough track record for the Lakers over the last, we're going on 8 years here. It's either been drafting some values but having to move off of them, or just whiffing entirely with guys like JHS and Dalton. And to the question earlier about the draft and the offseason, it's true. Like, this is the start of the offseason for the Lakers. It's their chance to flex the new muscles of the new scouting department and show what type of player they're looking for from a multitude of perspectives, right? Like, are they going for a younger player? Are they going for an older player? Are they going for a more skill and IQ-based player? Are they going for more athleticism and physical tools? Or are they trying to find a blend of that? Are they going for a big? Are they going for a wing? Like, so many questions will be answered with the draft, and whether they keep the pick or not, how that player slots into next year's roster and rotation. Yeah, it's a big draft for LA. It's a huge offseason for LA. And the draft will be the first indicator. Like, is Giannis traded? What do the Lakers do with the pick? Do they keep it? Do they flip it? What type of player do they pick? So there's a lot to be excited about. We're still over a month away from the draft, so a lot to cover between now and then. But thank you all so much for watching and listening. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, leave a 5-star review. I'll be back later in the week. I will talk to you all then.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.